Welcome to After the Credits, episode 299. I am your co-host, Maureen Antunes, joined today by special festival correspondent.
Bill Harris from the Green Screen of Death. Marina, how the hell are you, buddy?
I am surviving. I was just complaining about how cold I am.
I think we're both surviving. It's I must say, doing a film festival at home is harder, I think, than doing an actual film festival. I feel like I'm always busy at home and stuff is just getting in the way, whereas I can just go to a film fest and just kill it. And I feel so tired. I watch like 3 films a day. Ooh.
I know. I feel the pain because it's exactly true. I think one of my favorite festivals to go to, mostly because I go and that's all I do, is Whistler. Because otherwise, yeah, you've got other things you're doing. You're either working or you've got shit that's happening all the time. And I actually legitimately missed the first 2 days of TIFF because I forgot it was happening. I was so busy leading up to it and, you know, the festival kicked off and I was like, why are all these TIFF things coming up? And then, of course, I go and look at the dates and I'm like, well, fuck me.
Well, it doesn't help that you're like the busiest person in the world.
Okay, the fact that, okay, I'm curious about your final tally of movies.
27?
Oh, I was so close. I thought maybe I would do okay this year. I actually did much better than I anticipated. My final count was 24, nice. Which I think is amazing considering I missed 2 days of the festival.
And the fact that I, you know, actually paid for those and you didn't, but
that is true.
Yeah. Wow. That was a bit of a chunk of the bank account, I must say.
Oh yeah. That movies are so expensive at TIFF. Oh,
but I saw a couple of them for free. There was like Twitter contests and I won them. So at least that eliminated a couple films.
Well, that's awesome. It's nice to know that there's opportunities for that as well. Yeah, it is certainly a very expensive festival, but I mean, for me, as somebody that has never gone to TIFF, has only attended TIFF virtually over the last couple of years, I may actually make the effort to try to get out there next year if it's in person and there aren't like crazy restrictions, because it is really fun to kind of take in these movies. And the one thing I miss is that I didn't have as much of an opportunity. The disadvantage with the way that I saw the films is that a lot of the times I'm not seeing them with everybody else. So I'm like, okay, well, I can't really talk about this until the embargo is up. And then by that point, I've moved on to like the next thing and I just can't be bothered.
Embargoes.
I know. I actually follow them.
Wow.
I'm one of the few, I'm sure. But out of the films that you saw, I think we are going to do a top 10, but we thought we would start with the bad so that we could leave on a happy note. Out of everything that you saw, what was the worst thing for you that you saw?
It's funny because usually when we're at like VIFF, you don't even have a full like top 10. So this is really good. I'm really proud of you this time.
Thanks.
So this wasn't even close. Like the worst film I saw at TIFF was Dear Evan Hansen.
Okay, I have thoughts about this.
It's just an absolute piece of garbage. It has no idea what it's supposed to be. Like, totally, it's completely wrong. The lead actor is a 27-year-old man playing a 17-year-old kid, singing all the time for like no reason. The songs are awful. They just don't work. They kind of weirdly use the guy who committed suicide. It's in the trailer. In a song that's really joyful and just pissed me off. And they made me hate Amy Adams. Fuck you.
Yeah, I have some very mixed thoughts about this. I understand that it's based on like a Broadway musical that is quite successful. Fine, you know, it is what it is. I think that for me, I think that this is so the wrong approach to dealing with something as devastating as suicide. It, like you say, it's tonally, it feels tonally inappropriate. And maybe I'm missing the point of why it's so good, but I thought it was terrible. And the fact that, yeah, you have this, like, a clearly grown man playing a teenager is so problematic. I'm like, you could not find an amazing teenage singer somewhere. I'm sure there's one. There's got to be at least one. Come on, guys.
I really wanted to shave his head. that fro he's got going on. Oh, my God. Just let it go, dude. He's a psychopath. Evan Hansen is a psychopath.
Yeah, it does not play well. It does not play well. And like you say, the songs are not that great. I mean, it's just, for me, there's nothing going on here that I would say, yes, I recommend this movie. It just, nothing of it works.
And there's a lot of really good actors in this film that deserve a lot better than what they got. And I feel bad for them. Agreed. But yeah, it's funny. Like I didn't see it right away. I saw it like a week after it premiered and everybody was just killing it. Like the first night saying it was so terrible. I'm like, it can't be that bad. The trailer looked okay. And it's a giant Broadway play. Like they just, it's gotta be good. Like, no, it's not. It sucks.
So I also made the mistake of watching something absolutely terrible.
After I told you it was terrible.
Yes. And there's a reason for this. So you had said that it was terrible and I looked at it again and I'm like, but fuck, the premise sounds so cool. Maybe Bill missed something or maybe this is like, will speak to me as a woman. I doubted you.
And it was a Midnight Madness film and everybody, yes. You know, it's got to be cool because it's that. No.
Okay. So full admission, it starts awesome. Like the opening, like 15 minutes where it like sets up the universe and the story is actually pretty cool. But then it devolves into this nightmare thing that I didn't even finish. I think I lasted 45 minutes before I was like, I can't even finish this thing. It's just so terrible. And it's after Blue Dirty Paradise. There's nothing here that I could recommend.
No, I finished it.
I know you did.
Do I win? Like, no. I didn't even like the beginning. Like, I don't even know why what you're saying there. I just did not like the film at all. Like, it's not even stylishly good.
Like, no, and I for me, what I liked is I really liked the setup. Like, the concept of the movie is that humanity has found a new planet to inhabit, except although the only people that survive are the women, so the men have all died. So how do they reproduce? They get artificially inseminated by semen from men from the first Earth. And the whole thing is told over like this 10-minute, super trippy, like psychedelic drug-induced lens, which is not great, but it is interesting. It's different. And that's really the only thing I liked. After that, the whole thing just goes sideways, like right away. And then it just goes further down this rabbit hole that just makes no sense. The fact that this is directed by a man is even like worse. I don't even know. It's so bad. So bad.
All the men died because their hair started growing inside of their bodies. Backwards. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Okay. All right.
Like I say, it's showing promise.
I finished it. I get that badge of honor.
You do. I looked at it. I was like 45 minutes in. I'm like, you know what? I got other shit I need to watch. Screw this. I'm done.
I paid for it. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm doing this. Like,
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, that was the worst. Let's get to some of the best. Do you want to start with your number 10?
Yeah. And I feel oddly weird putting this in my top 10 because I have problems with it. Like it's The Guilty, the remake of the 2018 German film. The German film is so incredible that they had such great source material that you just knew the movie, this was going to be good. It's just not as good. And I don't think the main actor in the German version was so calm and cool and collected, whereas Jake Gyllenhaal is amped up to 10 the entire film. And it makes it a different film. I still like the film, but I like the German one a lot better. That being said, Jake is really good. it's just a really good premise. Like the 911 operator who gets a call of a kidnapping and stuff happens that just if you don't know the premise of the film or haven't seen the original, you're in for a trip. This is a really good film. It's good. It's just really the Hollywood version of a film that probably didn't need to be remade. Like, learn how to read, friends. Like the original was really good.
The one thing I did really appreciate about this version that's a little bit different than the original is the very clear, like, North American, really American-centric themes that are at play kind of in the background as well, which don't play a part in the original. But I fully agree with you. I think that the original is far, far better. But, man, Jake Gyllenhaal is so good. He really needs to make more movies. He is not in enough stuff.
No, and also shout out to Riley Keough for being mm-hmm. the voice of the female on the 911 call. She's just incredible. It's just a voice. And mm-hmm. the emotion in her voice is just amazing. And she's incredible. She's always incredible.
Yeah, there's
all these Hollywood actors playing voices in the film, and I didn't even like recognize them. So have fun watching the film and trying to figure out who they are, because I didn't.
Yeah, no, it was pretty solid. We were looking at the cast list after. I was like, holy crap, look at all these people. Yeah, yeah. It's really good. It didn't make my list, but it's solid.
Yeah, it's good. It's a four-star film.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. My number 10, The Pink Cloud. I don't even know if you saw this.
I did not.
Okay, so The Pink Cloud from Brazil, director Luli Gervasso's film. It's a pandemic thriller. So it starts off with this woman and this man who are having, they met, they're having, they've had a one-night stand. And all of a sudden, the city goes into lockdown and they are stuck together. And they're stuck together for a very, 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 very long time. Like, years. It's a super interesting concept. I love that they tackle some like concepts early on that you would like, you as a viewer or watching the movie, and you're like, well, this makes no sense. And they actually answer those questions before you actually start processing them, which I think is kind of amazing. It's a little bit on the long side. It does lose a bit of steam sort of like in the third act, but it really does bounce back. It really is like these two people in a two-floor apartment together for years. Like, there's just no way out. And these people that had literally a one-night stand are now basically spending their entire lives together. And it's a really interesting concept. And it really does follow the ups and downs of relationships really, really, in really interesting fashion. And I just really enjoyed it. I wish it was a tiny bit shorter. But overall, I think it's super effective, especially for a film that was probably shot during lockdown. It just really, really works. So The Pink Cloud.
Any idea if it has distribution or if
we're going to see it? I didn't look, so I'm not sure. I should have looked. Sorry.
That's okay. No, it sounds interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. It's funny how I have friends who broke up during COVID because they just spent way more time together than they had before and found out that they didn't like each other. So that sounds like the film with my friends. So
yeah, sadly.
My number 9 is The Humans, which is coming out in November mm-hmm. on Showtime.
Oh.
Really quite weird. I didn't know it was like a Showtime movie. That was announced a couple days ago. It's also kind of a COVID movie, I guess. A family gathers to celebrate Thanksgiving and family stuff starts to happen. Helped along by an old New York building that kind of is a character in its own. The daughter of the family just moved in, and they're having their family dinner. And it's more or less a play. It was a play, and you can totally tell it was a play. But man, is the acting incredibly strong. There's some really good scenes. I don't think it kind of works as a whole, but the scenes are really good, and the directing is pretty good, and the acting from Beanie Feldstein and Steven Yeun and Richard Jenkins and the surprisingly good Amy Schumer. Mm-hmm. It's really good. I I think it's more of an actor's display than an actual film, but come for the great acting, and there's some really good scenes. It's this list was hard because these the first like the I think like 10 to 7 are kind of like films I have problems with, and this one I have some problems with, but it's still a really strong film. Look out for it. It's called The Humans.
And this is actually quite a bit higher on my list. I thoroughly enjoyed this. And the thing that I liked the most is the performances are amazing, but I really like these horror overtones that are like strewed throughout. The entire thing is like very dark and really super moody. And it just kind of worked for me. It hit at the right moment. And that mix really was very effective for me. So it is quite a bit higher on my list.
That's cool. No, I like the film. I just had some problems with it. Like, it's still a really good film. It's like a 4-star film. Like,
It was good stuff. my number 9 is The Hole in the Fence from Joaquin Del Paso. Now, this one, I know for a fact, does not have distribution. It still has a sales agent. It's very kind of like Lord of the Flies. Sort of. It is certainly is inspired by that. It's the movie takes place in Mexico, and it follows this group of elite, super rich kids that are sent to a very exclusive summer camp, kind of like in this remote area of Mexico. And it's a religious summer camp. And the idea here is that this is where kids grow to like become the men that are going to rule Mexico in the future. And shit starts to go wrong, like, almost right away, which is always the case when you cram a bunch of boys together into a small space and give them lots and lots of rules. And so while they're doing regular exercise, they discover a hole in the fence that, like, surrounds the property. And it just starts to turn into a complete nightmare because everybody's like, is something actually coming through the fence or not? It's a very sort of on the nose, like with the whole fence and the hole. It's very sort of on the nose, about, you know, society and the rich staying rich and whatever else. But it is a really effective movie. And man, does it really fire on all cylinders in the last act? It is so, so disturbing in the best way possible. Thumbs up for Marina. This movie kicks ass.
You watched a bunch of movies I didn't watch, so this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is twisted. And it does have an interesting social message as well. So, I mean, it really does. For me, it just fired on all cylinders. I really liked The Hole in the Fence.
Mexico. Sounds like my 4 years of Scouts, where I found out I was a pyromaniac for a while.
It kind of feels a little bit like that.
Nice. My number 8 is Saloom. Is that how you pronounce it? Saloom?
Sure.
Yeah. A trio of mercenaries get stuck in a region of Senegal where nothing is what it seems. This is a very cool film for having absolutely no budget that just builds great characters and story and executes them to the fullest, and man, this did not cost a lot of money, and it is a mint film. It looks great. It's one of the big surprises of the festival, and this was a complete shock for me. You said it was pretty awesome, and you were pretty right. I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, me too. It's a little bit higher on my list. Not much, but a little bit. It came out of nowhere. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Apparently, Jean-Luc Herbelot, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Sure. He actually has a show on Netflix, which has some similar overtones where he mixes in, I guess, like African sort of like fantastical elements into like regular genre stuff, and it works really well. So now I'm kind of curious to check out the Netflix show. But yeah, this movie is just so awesome. And the thing I love about it is it's so unexpected. Like, you never know what's going to happen next because the whole thing is just so new and feels like super fresh. Awesome. Love it.
Shout out to the Lost Spoke Monster for showing up.
Oh, man.
That's a bit of a spoiler, but I really don't care.
So good. Oh, man. Yeah, I really love this. This is definitely one to watch. And I think it's also playing VIFF, right?
I think so, yeah. I don't know if it has distribution, but somebody should pick it up. Like Neon should pick it up or something like that.
For sure. It needs that extra push. It's so good. My number eight is a much more traditional thriller, The Daughter from Manuel Martin Cuenca. I know I've never seen any of his other films, but it seems like he likes to play in this sort of thriller genre. This one is the story of a young woman who is pregnant and is taken in by this couple who essentially are trying to take her baby. Like, she doesn't want the baby, so they're going to take the baby from her. But there's way, way more going on. And the whole thing is plays very mysteriously. And the way that the story unfolds has all of these different layers. So I don't want to give out too much, but I found it super effective and did not expect how bloody it gets at the end. It's intense in the final, like, 15, 20 minutes. Like, shit happens.
When you say a film where somebody's trying to come and grab a baby, I think of scissors and cutting open the stomach. But that's just me.
It's not quite that intense.
Okay.
Yeah, like the girl does agree to give up the baby, and then you know stuff happens because over happens. A period of 9 months, stuff is going to happen. It's really. I just love how slowly it kind of drops hints, and the story constantly shifts because you're not ever 100% sure of what exactly is going on. And then as things start to get revealed more like towards the second half of the movie, you're like, okay, so what exactly is happening? Because up until now, it hasn't been fully clear. I just really like those kinds of thrillers that keep you guessing all the time, and it's superbly well made and the acting is top notch. It's a really solid, very well put together Spanish thriller, and it really does work really effectively. But that ending, man, really got me. Did not see that coming.
It's funny how I didn't watch this either, and it sounds really awesome, and now I'm pissed off I didn't see it. Like, it sounds like you got like a totally different tiff than I did, but at the same time watch stuff that I watch. So I'm really happy to hear this. Like, I want to see these films.
I tried to play a little outside the lines this year because I'm like, you know, let's give some things that maybe I wouldn't generally watch a go. And I was pleasantly surprised.
My number seven is 1 Second, the new Zhang Yimou film. A father escapes a labor camp during the Chinese Cultural Revolution to see a newsreel in a movie theater that has his daughter on it. He wants to see his daughter. He's never seen his daughter. And this is not your regular Zhang Yimou film. There is no wire foo. This is not Hero. This is him at his quietest. It is such a lovely, small, quiet film where this guy just really wants to see his daughter. And he meets up with somebody and they have an adventure. And it's really beautiful. I was shocked at how much it was just so much different than I've seen him ever film before. And I was quite blown away by it, even though this supposedly is the censored version of the film because the Chinese government got to it and made him reshoot the entire film pretty much. Oh, so it's quite poignant and it's a lovely film. And it's a VIF, so hopefully people around here will be able to see it. Yeah, it's lovely. 1 Second, Zhang Yimou.
Okay, well, I'll have to add that one to my list. I totally missed this one.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
My number seven, we already talked about, Saloom.
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 Watch it. Yeah, I really hope people get to see that one. Out of all these films, I hope that's the one people get to see pretty much. My number six is Petit Manman, the new Celine Sciamma film. While packing up her dead grandma's belongings, a little girl goes into the backyard and time travels back in the future and meets her mother when she's a child. And they have interesting conversations and build tree forts, and it's 70 minutes of absolute bliss. I love this film. It's so beautiful, and just the acting of the kids is just great, which is such a fine line. Like, sometimes I just can't stand little children in movies, and these children are great. Sciamma is on another level. She's just hitting home runs all the time. this one is going to be big. I think it's going to be France's Oscar film. So watch out. It's coming out pretty quick. It's lovely. I love this film.
This was one that I'm really upset I missed because it was available in the first couple of days of the festival, the first couple of days that I missed. So I didn't get a chance to see it. So I'm looking forward to catching up with it.
Yeah, it was my first film of the festival. And it was the only film I had technical problems with, too. The video was really bad. It looked like 480p video.
Oh.
Except for the, and the rest of the festival was great. But just that video was really bad. So, yeah. Oh. Opening day jitters.
Yeah. So maybe it was good that I missed the first 2 days.
Yeah.
My number six, we also already talked about The Humans.
Nice. My number five is Flea. Did you see Flea?
I did see Flea.
Nice. The story of an Afghan family trying desperately to get to Sweden after immigrating to Russia. This is really stunning stuff. Animated, real voices, and really tough to watch at times. But man, is it, stay with it. It's really worth it. It's really scary what people will do to get freedom or a chance to even like get freedom. Mm-hmm. I cried, I smiled, I laughed. It's just a really poignant film. Neon's got it. It's coming out quick. It's going to be a best animated Oscar nominee for sure. It's just one of those films. You got to check it out.
I fully agree. I think that this is so effective and it really shows the power of animation. I mean, it would be much more difficult to tell this story without the animation because you're able to animate and bring to life the story as it's being told in the past. I think it's not just a really great animated film, it's also a really fantastic documentary, and I would not be surprised if it made the shortlist in both categories, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I totally didn't think about that, but yeah, for sure.
Super effective, really, really, really well made, highly, highly, highly recommended. It's very, very good. It sadly didn't make my list because reasons, but I'd highly recommend it for sure. It's amazing. So beautiful.
Right on.
My number five is also a documentary, actually. It's The Rescue. This is the new documentary from the makers of Free Solo. Admittedly, I wasn't really sure what to make of this because I'm like, how do you even make a documentary about this thing that happened and was like a global sensation for like a month? So it's the story of how they rescued the football team from the caves of, was it Thailand, I think it was? I don't even remember.
Wasn't it Chile?
No, this is not. This is the, I want to say it was either Thailand or Singapore, somewhere in Southeast Asia. The kids got trapped in a cave that flooded due to usually they close the caves for flooding season, but the cave flooded much earlier. And this entire soccer team basically got stuck. And the entire thing sort of unfolded over a period of a month. And when the government realized that they couldn't do the rescue themselves, they actually were almost forced to bring in outside help, namely from a couple of individuals from the UK who are professional cave divers, which apparently is quite different than regular cave diving regular diving period. And it just, it's a fascinating and really effective documentary. I'm like, how are they going to make this anywhere as thrilling as Free Solo since you're not there? The event already happened, but they have this amazing collection of stock footage that I had never seen. They mix it in with some like TV footage and then interviews with the divers themselves. And the entire thing, apparently they did a bunch of recreations as well, which is not obvious. It's very, very good. Very, very effective. They're at this point, I would say maybe the front runners for a documentary prize. It's very good. The Rescue. That's my
name. I didn't watch it because it's coming out in 3 weeks on Discovery Channel.
Yes.
So I really did want to see it. Free Solo made me almost throw up in the theater. So hopefully this is not as bad.
No, I don't think so. But it does have, if you're claustrophobic, there are moments which can be very disorienting.
Shit.
Oh no.
That was your number four?
My number five. So your number four.
My number four is dash cam. Oh my God. This one kind of surprised me and blew me away. Like, I didn't know what the hell it was. It's directed by Rob Savage, who made a really cool Zoom horror film called Host last year, which was really well received. And this one is on another level. This American, played by Annie Hardy, who is just the most incredibly annoying piece of shit character I've seen in a movie in a very long time, who you just want to see get punched in the face, goes to England to see a friend of hers who she was in a band with. And while she does that, she steals his car, opens his Skip the Dishes apps, and starts delivering food. And during one of these pickups, she picks up the grandma from hell. She gets paid to deliver a grandmother. And the grandmother from hell, it turns out, has really batshit crazy powers and can do shit. And the movie is absolutely insane. It just ramps up and gets more violent and screwed up. And it's just incredible. Other than the whole like shaky cam aspect of it, this movie is just genius. It's not for everyone. I'm a little sick in the head, it seems. But man, I loved this film. It surprised the hell out of me. One of the most surprising films of the year. I don't know if you saw it, but I hope you did, and I hope you liked it.
Oh, man. I watched it because you recommended it. It had kind of made my sort of short list of things to watch that day. And I'm like, okay, well, Bill said it's good. I'm going to give it a chance. This movie, I almost wanted to watch it twice because the action on screen was so ridiculous. But I was caught up in the comments. The whole thing is like shot with like you. It's almost like through the app. You're watching it through the app as if you were watching it on like Instagram Live. And so people are making comments, and the running commentary at times is so fucking hilarious. It's almost as good, if not better, than the movie.
Yeah.
So the entire time I'm like, fuck, I'm missing that. But man, I want to read this, the comments. So you almost want to watch it twice, but it's so insane. I almost put it on my list, but then I thought, you know, I'm going to give this plot to something that maybe most people might not have heard of. But man, this movie is on like another fucking level.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll bring the insanity. Like it's
something else.
It's nuts. Yeah. Number four, dash cam.
Oh, man. My number four is Michael Franco's Sundown. So I'd never heard of Michael Franco until I watched New Order last year, which blew my fucking mind. And I haven't gone back to watch anything else of his, but now I see his name and I'm like, yep. I'm watching it, whatever it is. So Tim Roth and
Charlotte Gainsbourg.
Thank you. Are on vacation in Mexico. Something happens. They need to go home. He loses his passport, ends up in Mexico on his own. So that's kind of the setup, but not at all the setup. And I just... this movie, man, I love it so much. I've come the last couple of years, I've really been into movies that don't give you all the answers, that really make you fucking work for it. And this one makes you work for it to the point where like halfway through, I'm like, are they even brother and sister? Are they just making this shit up? Like, I'm not actually sure anymore. I love the slow burn here. And I love how it's never quite what you think it is. And then when you find out what it is, you're like, would I have done the same thing? I don't know. I loved it. Loved it.
So it's my number three.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's like the thinker of the festival. Like, I've been thinking about this film since I watched it. I actually raised my star rating on it. I had it at 4 when I first watched it, and I raised it to 4.5, which I usually never do. But I was just – it's so first off, Tim Roth is incredible. He's just on another level in this film. Maybe my favorite male performance of the year. He's just so calm in this like really weird situation, and it's like he has answers to questions that everybody else doesn't, and he's just like, I'm going to be really calm about it. It's really incredible. I have lots of theories about this film, so we should probably talk about this off camera to avoid spoilers. But man, it's really special, and it's gonna piss people off because you're right; it does not answer questions. And yeah, I don't have a problem with that. If the film is watchable and makes you think, mm-hmm. why are you watching? What, like, are you watching films just to have Michael Bay all the time? Like, no, I want to flex my brain a little bit. And this is definitely that film.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so happy. So happy you enjoyed it. That's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible.
What's your number four?
My number four was Dash Cam.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. So number three
is Sundown.
Oh, yeah. So my number three is Jagged, which is Alison Klayman's documentary on, technically Alanis Morissette, but really as an in on Jagged Little Pill, which isn't even like celebrating any sort of special anniversary this year. It's just, you know, a documentary on Jagged Little Pill and Alanis Morissette. And I'm actually kind of bummed that Alanis has not great things to say about the documentary, because I think it's fantastic. It not only captures, like, apparently this is the year where we talk about the shit that happened in the 90s. I don't know why, but it's turned into that.
I don't have a problem with that.
No, neither do I. I mean, Jagged Little Pill came out in my seminal youth moment. And as much as I didn't love it because it was way too mainstream for me, I certainly had respect for Alanis Morissette and what she was doing. And that hasn't flagged over the years. And it's just a really fascinating look at an artist who came into her own at a time when it wasn't really okay for women to have a voice, at least not a voice that was angry and pissed off. And it's just a really fascinating look at the making of an album and a career. And it's really fun and it's really insightful. And they get, you know, unprecedented access to Alanis Morissette, which she doesn't do a whole lot of interviews and certainly hasn't over the last decade. So it's nice to have that behind the scenes and her take on what was happening at the time. And I thought it was really, really good. Like, super thumbs up from me. Really enjoyed it. It's an HBO doc, so it'll be landing on HBO sometime later this year. Definitely one to check out. Highly recommended.
So did you see anything in the documentary that you would think that she would find offensive?
No, which is why I'm shocked. Like, I don't even understand what it is that she's upset about. I mean, admittedly, there are moments where, you know, she's a rock star, right? But I mean, rock stars are rock stars. If anything, she was always she comes across as somebody that was really in tune with the culture at the time. And she was really worried and concerned for the women in her audience. And there were scenes where she's like, you know, she's telling the guys off, like the rest of her band, like, you can't be having a room in the back where you bring your groupies to fuck them. That's so not okay. And I thought, good for you. Like, you're putting down your foot. I don't see anything else in the doc that I would say, like, well, that puts her in a bad light at all.
Oh, I hope I get to see it. Because hopefully she doesn't try to block it or something like that, which would suck, because I do want to see it. Wasn't You Ought to Know written about Dave Coulier from that show?
She doesn't say.
Okay.
She doesn't admit it one way or the other. But that was the general feeling at the time.
Okay, cool. I thought I'd put that out.
It's a 90s throwback trivia.
Totally. My number two is Night Raiders. Canadian film from Denis Goulet, her debut film, starring the great El Maya Tailfeathers, set in 2043, post-apocalyptic America, where children are a property of the state. And despite, like, the main character's child gets kidnapped by these people, and she joins the underground fighters to try to get her back. It's dystopian sci-fi, which is like a massive sweet spot for me. And it's a film to me about representation. I have an Indigenous podcast partner who never gets to see this kind of stuff, and I can't wait for him to see it. This film's gonna blow his mind. It's incredible. For a film that costs probably nothing to make, the special effects are great tension. Uses Indigenous language, which is incredible. It's a complete surprise. It blew me away, and I'm happy that it's opening next week and everybody will be able to see it.
Yeah, I'm so bummed I missed this. This was another a sad miss from the first 2 days of Marina not tiffing, but I'm excited. I'm excited to see it. It sounds so good.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful.
My number two, maybe does not come as a surprise. The Power of the Dog. It's Jane Campion. She is so in my wheelhouse. I don't even, like, we speak the same language. I love this movie on another level. I saw it twice.
Wow.
And it is not an easy movie to sit through twice because it's quite long. But fuck, it's so good. It's like, I don't even really know what it's like. It's unlike anything because it's kind of a Western, but it's not. It's kind of like a gay romance, but it's not. It has this superb undulating score from Johnny Greenwood that feels...
Johnny Greenwood, man.
I know. It's just, it adds this layer of like almost horror to everything when there's nothing horrific going on screen. Oh, it's just, it's so good. And Benedict Cumberbatch, I honestly didn't think he had a performance like this in him. It's tops for me. It's so good. And it's just, it's never quite the movie that you think it is. It's just playing on so many levels and it's so beautiful. I have nothing but good things to say. It's not my number one for reasons that I'll get to in a second, but it does nothing wrong as far as I'm concerned. And to boot, it's a Netflix movie. So you'll have a chance to see it, you know, soonish, I would guess. But it's worth, I hope I get a chance to see it on the big screen because it does beg to be seen on a big screen where you can take in the scenery, which plays a huge role in the film, and get to experience the sound, which the soundscape is just surreal and on another level. It's perfection. Perfection.
This movie was weird for me. I had problems with it until I didn't. The third act really freaking hits hard. Mm-hmm. And for a while, I'm like, this is really long. Well, it's really, really taking its time. And this should be a little faster, but it's still good. And Cumberbatch is just destroying. Mm-hmm. And the super underrated Jesse Plemons is also destroying. And Kirsten Dunst is also destroying. And Cody Smith-McPhee is a really weird looking dude. But that third act just destroyed me. It's so incredible. It raised the film up so much. And the more I thought about it, it didn't seem as slow anymore. And I really enjoyed it. It's not on my list, but it was like my number 11. We'll just say that. It's really great. I just wish it was a little faster. A little faster.
Yeah, I will say that whole second act where it's mostly just Kirsten Dunst kind of losing her shit, it feels like it's a different movie. Like, how does that play into this whole thing? And then it becomes a little clearer towards the end. I don't know. I find that the fact that Campion makes the decision to sort of expand the field of vision just beyond the central characters or what you assume to be the central characters of the story is so effective. It really gives you a really great picture of not just them, but the world that they're in and the time that they're in. For me, it totally worked, especially on like a second viewing. It hit.
There was also a scene in the film that really jarred me. He hits a horse.
Mm.
I didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
It kind of took me out of the film. It's her first film since 2009.
Ugh,
and she needs to work more. Bright Star is an incredible film too. If you guys haven't seen Bright Star, that's really great.
That might be the last time what's her name actually acted.
Yeah. Do you know what my favorite Jane Campion film is? I should be shot for this, but I really love In the Cut.
I like In the Cut.
It's such a crappy film that makes me laugh so incredibly hard.
Oh man, I totally don't think it's a crappy movie. I think it totally plays well.
No, but I'm saying, in the way that people like Showgirls like in the cut.
Oh, I see, and I don't think it's quite as campy as Showgirls. I do think it certainly has problems, but I've never fully understood why people hated that movie as much as they did. Because I do have a soft spot in my heart for that film. I think it's quite good.
Yeah, I think it's good too. But yeah, it's a good. I can't wait. I'm pretty sure Tom will program in advance city. You'll have a chance to see it.
Yeah, I hope so too, because I'm definitely in. So what is your number one movie?
This wasn't even close. There was like no question. After I saw it, I was like, this is probably my favorite film of the year. Joachim Trier's The Worst Person in the World. My God. 4 years in 12 chapters of Julie and her struggles and triumphs with men, family, and just coping with life. This is the most beautiful film I've seen this year. It's almost like, it feels like a next generation Amelie, kind of like, just how just the female character just blew me away. And not to mention the men in the film are really good, including the really great Anders Danielsson Lie, who's in all of Joachim Trier's movies. Joachim Trier is quite possibly the greatest European director working right now. And he gets no credit for anything. And hopefully this is the film that brings him up into like the stratosphere, because this is so infinitely watchable. And yes, it has subtitles. People give stop. It's so incredible. It just spoke to me like in ways that just were incredible. It's the best film I've seen this year. Like, and it's not even close. Yeah. I don't know if you even saw it, but hopefully you did.
I did not. I'm
kind God of damn it, Marina.
Well, you know, there were also a batch of films that weren't available to me, and I actually considered buying tickets to a few of them, and then I thought, what am I doing? I'll get the chance to see them at some point. I'll watch some other shit that I might not get a chance to see. So hence how my list got made.
Yeah, well, Neon has it. They released a trailer this morning, so it's coming.
I actually saw that. I haven't watched it yet, but I saw that they did, so I'm excited to check that out.
So yeah, it's coming soon. It's incredible. I can't wait for people to see it. A lot of people that I was following who were doing like TIFF coverage, this was their number one film too. So I'm happy to be right.
Well, and I'm sure you probably are, because I'm fairly certain probably no one else has this as their number one. But I love this movie on another level. My number one movie is Silent Night. Fuck, wow. I love this movie. This thing just spoke to me. It's just the perfect mix of acerbic comedy. And like, it's just so pitch black. I love it.
The thing, the first half is very black comedy, but I think I like the second half better.
Oh yeah, the second half gets very dark in other ways. I love that I didn't know what the fuck was happening is really what I really liked. And the fact that just these people are such terrible human beings, all of them, and just some of the stupid things that happen, like the fact the kid cuts his finger and there's blood all over the carrots and everybody's still eating the fucking carrots. That to me was just like the dumbest thing ever. But the whole time I'm like, okay, somebody else is going to eat the carrot. This is great. It really does work for me. It's a little bit over the top in places. It does get a little long in the tooth in the end. It's super, the ending is kind of both unexpected and super obvious at the same time. But for me, this was like a little bit of perfection and could well be my new favorite Christmas movie.
I like for the fact that they just don't give a fuck. They're just like, there's a gas, it's coming from Russia in a big giant storm. We're not going to tell you what happened. No, we're not going to do that. It's just coming. Yep. We're all going to die.
Yep.
Yep. That's your plot. That's,
yeah, and the only person that questions any of this is the kid, like a 9-year-old kid.
The kid from Jojo Rabbit.
Yes.
I was so happy to see him, and he's just cursing up a storm, and just it's hilarious.
Yes, I did really love it.
And, you know, Keira Knightley's in it. Matthew Good, who I know you like. I love Keira Knightley. The great Lucy Punch is in it. She's not in enough films. I saw a few films with Lily Rose Depp in it. It was like the tiff of her. Like I saw, she was in a movie called Wolf, which was okay. But yeah, I liked this one, just probably not as much as you did. It's good.
Yeah, no,
it's
clearly not. I don't think anybody liked it as much as I did.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
I thought it was on an island with dash cams, so.
That's hilarious.
That film just spoke to me like in ways that probably shouldn't be nice and human, but whatever.
Oh, man. Oh, and that was Tiff in a nutshell.
Yeah. Did you have fun?
I did. I did really have a good time. I really enjoyed the majority of the films I saw. I didn't see a lot of stuff that I really didn't care for. Like, generally, everything was pretty decent. So overall, I think I had a pretty decent tiff. I was quite happy with the way my experience happened. How about you?
I loved it. I other than, you know, the two that we talked about, I didn't see a bad film, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And plus it eliminated me going to the VIF more or less, because I don't have to go into COVID world now because I saw all the films at TIFF. And I'm only going to VIF for 2 days to see four films, more or less. So that's really cool. I hope this continues every year. I don't want to go to Toronto. It's expensive. And if we can see everything online, I'm down with that.
Yeah, the flexibility of being able to access festivals, even, you know, if they're just regional. You know, if you're in Canada and you can watch your TIFF films, I think even that right there is a win, because it does open up. I mean, the reality of it is that every film festival plan, they're catering to different audiences and they're programming to specific audiences, and they're all slightly different. Some are more regional than others. Some of them are programming to attract big talent. So, I mean, it's nice to be able to access those types of experiences from places where you might not have access to it. Like, we're lucky. I'm lucky, I should say. I'm in Vancouver, where it's, you know, a fairly big central movie hub, but even you're not. I mean, you're on the island. It's a smaller market there. You know, if you're in Kelowna, it's an even smaller market. So the fact that you're able to access this amazing world-class programming from across the country, I think, is super special.
Yeah. And I'm tired. I went straight into TIFF, more or less. I took like a week or two off after Fantasia, where I watched 96 films. And then I went straight into TIFF. And then I'm taking like a week off and then going straight into VIF, where I'm probably going to watch every film on the digital platform and a couple in the theater. So I'm going to be happy at October 15th, where I don't have to do any more film fests, but it's me bitching about being happy, so I shouldn't talk.
Yeah, I'm not quite that insane. I actually completely skipped Fantasia this year. It was just too busy, and I think VIF will be a relatively quieter festival for me this year. I've looked at the films that are on offer, and honestly, there isn't a lot that excites me, but I'm sure there was probably a couple there that I've missed that I should probably take a look at. And there's always surprises, right? Once you start digging a bit deeper.
If you wanted to see Belfast, it's sold out.
Yeah, I think Belfast is going to have to wait, though I do really want to see it. There's a list of films that I do have on my to watch list that is quite long and quite extensive, and I'm sure I'll get to it eventually, but I'm not in a hurry to really catch anything. That boat has sailed for me. I'm tired of trying to keep up with the new thing. At this point, I'm just trying to keep up with the things that interest me.
It's funny. I got every film I wanted to watch at TIFF except for Titane, which was sold out before tickets went on sale, like a Metallica concert.
How does that even happen?
Like, are they scalping TIFF tickets? Like, I was pissed off. Like, I was like, they had one screening and it was sold out, and they didn't add anything else. It opens in 2 weeks, but whatever. I still wanted to see it. I think that was really poor. Like, there's no way that should have happened. Like, I was on that website at 7 o'clock. I was actually on there at like 6:55, and it was sold out. Like that's not fair.
Wow.
And so that was poor, but everything else was run really well. TIFF is just a smooth company. They know what they're doing. And I can't wait to do more of it.
Yeah, I really want to see The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which looks so good.
It's in theaters right now.
Yes, I know. So I need to see if I can make the time to get to it. But I'm all about the Jessica Chastain train. Bring it on.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you for taking the time and sharing your TIFF experience. This has been fun to catch up.
Yeah, for sure. What's going on with your podcast?
We're hoping to record another episode of Girls on Pop next week. After the credits is temporarily on hiatus, but we will be back soon.
You guys are becoming like us.
No, not quite 3 months. Well, has it been 3 months since we recorded? I don't know.
3 months is good for us.
Yeah, no, we are not on an indefinite hold. They're just a temporary hold. We will get back soon.
I look forward to hearing the new shows.
Well, we will be back. I'm sure probably first we'll probably have a VIF wrap before we go back to a regularly programmed after the credits. So we may have you back sooner rather than later.
You never know, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Bill. Thank you, everyone. You can find out you can check out all the show notes at atcpod.ca. Bill, where can folks find you?
I am on Twitter at soundjab69 and Letterboxd soundjab69 and Hack the Planet.
Nice. And you can find me on Twitter at The Marina. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until next time, we'll see you after the credits. Thank you.